Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Triangulation is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Triangulation, episode 281, recorded Monday, January 9th, 2017. Amy Lombard, connected. Triangulation is brought to you by Curry, a real live robot with a great personality. Curry is available for pre-order now at heycurry.com. That's HEYKURI.com. And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you could post to 200-plus job boards, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter free at ZipRecruiter.com/TWiT. And by Audible. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/triangulation. It's time for Triangulation, the show where we get together with some of the most interesting people. You've heard this spiel. I realize I say this every time. The most interesting people in technology, and we talk and we learn. And I'm thrilled to have Amy Lombard here. She is I want to say VSCO. Is it VSCO or VSCO? You can tell me.
It's VSCO.
Okay. She's a recipient of last year's VSCO's Artist Initiative, professional photographer, but I love the term documentary photographer. And her book that she created as part of the VSCO initiative is called Connected. And I'm thrilled to have a signed, numbered copy of this. So thank you, Amy, for sending along and welcome.
Of course.
To Triangulation. This is one of those great photo books that almost feels like your Instagram feed, which is actually kind of similar to the book, isn't it? If you follow
right. And that was kind of the point, honestly, yeah. When we were designing the book. I mean, the book itself, for people who don't know, it's about internet meetups and how people are connecting the internet around really specific interests and commonalities and things like that. So when we were designing the book, it's like the idea of creating a book about the internet and technology almost seems counterintuitive. But when you think about the process of going in and documenting these groups coming together in real life, in a way, creating the book kind of replicates that. So we thought a lot about making a small square book that kind of replicates the experience of maybe looking at an iPad or looking at photos on your cell phone where you know exactly what you're looking at and almost kind of like catering to our limited attention spans. So it was certainly something we thought about.
As a photographer, do you think the internet is a good thing for what you do, especially as a documentary photographer? Or
I think the internet is great for photography right now, especially when you look at how much Instagram and, you know, really any kind of social media network has infiltrated everyone's lives, but particularly with photographs. I think that it makes photography more important than ever, and people understanding and appreciating a strong image, whether it's taken by a professional photographer or taken by someone just with an iPhone.
I think that's why some photographers bemoan this, because I think we're in a golden age of photography, aren't we? I mean, in the last 2 years, I think they said more photos were taken last year than were taken in the entire history of humanity. And and maybe not even in a year, in a month, because it's just exploded. And everybody's a photographer now. I was watching Don't Judge Me live with Kelly this morning, and they're talking about Instagram filters, and I like Amaro. Kelly's saying, well, you know, what I like to do is Hefe, and then I'll take a picture of the Hefe, and then I'll put Amaro. I mean, that's a conversation that would be nonsensical a few years ago.
Right. No, I mean, like, aesthetic choices are something that is now important to everyone. So I think it's easy to, as a photographer, when you're just kind of like bombarded with images, it's easy to feel kind of negative about it, but at the same time, I think the long-term effects of it actually serve us pretty well.
Yeah, yeah. Good. I'm glad to hear that, because I love photography, and I'm a avid amateur photo buff, and we've done photography shows. Yes, we've done photography shows on this network, and I have the worst kind of photographic disease. I'm somehow convinced myself that just getting a better camera will make me a better photographer, and so far, no. No luck.
I make it look better. But
no, not even that. In fact, sometimes a better camera makes all of the flaws in your photography stand out better. So
yeah, all the details extra sharp.
Exactly. So, and the truth is, I love the aesthetic of this book. And of course, Visco is a really great photography app for camera phones, because the camera phones have gotten so good that people are making amazing images. Your iPhone 7 or your Google Pixel or your Samsung Galaxy S7 camera is as good as the professional cameras of 20 years ago.
Absolutely. And on some cameras, you can even shoot raw, which for people who don't know, that's like the equivalent of a digital negative. And being able to manipulate images from there, it's really no different than, say, a digital SLR or even a film camera.
So the images that you shoot, and we're going to get into your beat, which is fantastic, internet groups. But I'm just curious, technically, from the images that you shoot, are you using a DSLR or what are you using?
Yeah, so I am using a Canon 5D Mark III, and I'm pretty much exclusively Canon.
Yeah.
I shoot with the speed lights. They're great, super transportable. But early on in my career, I was really kind of holding on to film. And
wow.
So I was stuck with the square image, which is like how I was seeing
the world. You
were
shooting medium format film?
Yeah, medium format film, up until maybe like 2013. And so just seeing everything in a square frame, it just, a lot of the times I just crop after the fact because that's how I think about the image as I'm making it. Hence the reason why the images in the book are square.
How interesting. I mean, talk about full circle, because Instagram is square now it's not anymore, but for a long time it was square.
Yeah.
But you come to it from a completely different place. Medium format, 120 photography. Wow.
Yeah.
Film photography is now the hipster thing to do. And since you live in Brooklyn, I think you're probably well aware of that.
Yeah.
I went out
and
bought
out the door and I'm bombarded by that.
I went out and bought a Rolleiflex, an old Rolleiflex, because I wanted to just try this square format and this kind of belly shooting.
Right.
And inspired by the great street photographers. And also by the idea that film photography requires you, because it's so expensive and painstaking, and you can't chimp the viewfinder after every image, to really think about what you're shooting.
Right. Having intent, I mean, with those cameras, especially with the Rolleiflex, and for me, I was shooting with the Mamiya C330, which is very similar to that.
Yeah.
A twin lens reflex. It's like you have to be so intentional about every single thing that you shoot because it's so slow. It puts you in the right mindset, I think, then to go into shooting digitally and not being able to just like rapid fire all the time.
Is that how you still shoot now that you're digital, you still shoot? I love that word, intentionally.
Mm-hmm. I think that it's shooting digitally has kind of changed it a little bit. I think that I'm a little bit speedier, as opposed to when I was with the enormous setup of a medium format camera. But I think it's important I just think that it's such a waste when you have like 500 images of the same exact thing.
Yeah.
Intention is everything. And I think that's important regardless of the format that you're shooting.
When did you, let me start back in the beginning. Cause in the forward of Connected, we're talking to Amy Lombard. This is her wonderful. Can you buy this book or am I just the holder of one of 200 unique or 400 unique editions here?
Yeah, so it's limited to 400
books,
but it can be purchased directly through me and hopefully soon in bookstores.
And at your site, amylombard.com?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
If you go to bookstores, you're going to have to print more than 400. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's pretty small edition. We wanted it to be like an art object.
It is. And that's okay. They're adding to the concept of intentionality. There's intentionality on the part of the photographer, but I can understand how a photographer would also want to kind of encourage intentionality on the part of your viewer. And that's one way to do it, is say this is limited edition. You know, look at each picture one at a time. You know that kind of thing. I love this.
Totally.
So there it is on the website amylombard.com. I'm going to take a little break. We're going to come back. I hate to do that. I always do this with photographers. So there's two ways we talk to photographers. As technologists, we're very interested in the geekery of it and the gear. And I think that's not weird because the gear is part of the fun. But then I also love talking about the art. And your art is fantastic. And even your Instagram feed is just the one most wonderful Instagram feed. If people aren't following Amy Lombard on Instagram, I would highly recommend it. It's just really full of gorgeous stuff. But we'll take a break and we'll come back and we'll talk more. Amy Lombard is our guest. The book Connected is available right now through her website in a special limited edition, amylombard.com. Our show today brought to you by a robot. A real live robot made its debut. Curry made its debut, or should I say his debut? Is it hers or his debut? That's the question. You take a look and see. Curry is, well, definitely has a personality. I think it's a he. A real live robot. See the eyes? The eyes are so expressive. They're so amazing. And Curry makes these great sounds. You actually have the sounds on the website if you want to see. Now, Curry's little. Curry's not intimidating. You see there Curry is with this child, and Curry's only knee high. He moves around your house. I'm going to say he. He moves around your house all the time, unassisted, autonomously. He knows how to avoid stairs and obstacles. Here's the little Curry. Watch his eyes, because he comes alive in your house. He'll greet you when you get home. And always a different greeting. It's kind of like R2-D2, a lot of beeps and boops. But you can understand. He'll nod his head for yes. He'll answer you with a distinctive yes or no chirp. He can shake his head, too. You see, he can look at you. He's got cameras in there. Curry is not a vacuum cleaner. Although, I have to say, I think he's probably close cousin to a vacuum cleaner. Because he does motivate around the house that way. But instead, he's got cameras. And he actually will go check out noises in your house and take pictures and send them to you. You can also have him make rounds, go around the house like a little cute little watchman looking for stuff and take pictures and send them back to you. He can you can look at the saved photos and videos too that he's posted to keep an eye on what's going on around the house. And also, I think kids, there's some video on the website. The website, by the way, H-E-Y, Hey Curry, and it's K-U-R-I, heycurry.com. They have some videos on there of kids interacting with him. And it's really kind of interesting. Children love him. Curry, there he is. He's not going to go down those stairs. Don't worry. Don't worry. HeyCurry.com. You can actually pre-order. It's not out yet. They just showed it. They debuted it for the first time. They've been working on it. I talked to the guys at Mayfield, Mayfield Robotics, the company that does this. And they've been working on this in secret for about 3 years. There's the bleeps and the bloops and the robot sounds that he makes. And on the website. And they've really done some interesting stuff with this. If you want to find out more, heycurry.com. Pre-orders start with a deposit, refundable, of course, of $100, and then $5.99 at time of shipment, which will be later this year, excluding taxes and shipping, of course. Hey Curry, H-E-Y-K-U-R-I, a real live robot pal. And I think, you know, if you've got kids, this is like, They'll think back and they'll say, I remember when we got our first robot. I say that. I remember when we got our first color TV. Dad didn't want to get one for the longest time. Don't be that dad. Get the robot. HeyCurry.com. Amy Lombard is our guest. you've seen some amazing things because you've been going around visiting with internet interest groups of all kinds. Of all kinds.
Of all kinds.
That must be a fun project. How many groups did you meet project. For Connected?
Oh my God! At a certain point, I kind of lost track because I was photographing it from 2013 to 2016. But I would say probably anywhere from 80 to 100 groups or so. But yeah, there was a lot of different groups and locations, and it was just such an amazing experience.
How did you get this idea? I mean, this—you proposed this, right, to Visco, and they said, "Okay, go do it." Or had you been doing this all along?
So what happened was in 2012, I was working as a social media editor at Time Magazine, and you know, I had studied photography; it had always been my thing, but I never really thought that I could make a living doing this. So just from the daily grind and that kind of stuff, I had kind of lost myself as a photographer a little bit. And I forced myself one day to think about what am I interested in?
I hear somebody. Who's that?
That's Sasha.
Hi, Sasha.
Anyway, so I forced myself.
Oh, I see. There's a lot of different. There's a lot of different dogs in here.
She's
a sweetie.
But anyway, so while doing that, it kind of forced me to think about what I wanted to photograph next and really go in specifically thinking about what I wanted to do. So I thought about, what am I interested in? And I had just gotten Sasha, actually. And I thought, well, maybe there's something to explore here with different kinds of animal owners in New York City. Maybe there's a particular social group or whatever it may be. Through the process of doing that, I started working on a project called Doggies and Tierras, which focused in on like this specific dog social scene in New York City where they have dog beauty pageants. They have a Girl Scout for dogs. They have all these different type of events that most people wouldn't know about for your small dog. But while I was working on that, I saw this one corgi beach meetup that they have every year in Southern California. And I thought, and you see these photographs, I mean, like BuzzFeed typically does a roundup of like Instagram photos taken at this particular meetup. And it's just like the most picturesque thing you could ever imagine. And really like corgis, California, it's like an internet, it's internet gold. So I saw these photos and I thought,
by the way,
go to something like that.
Corgis with little tiny short legs on the beach. Now that is internet gold.
it's pretty amazing. It's pretty special. And so I was like, there has to be something like that here in New York. And so, you know, I'm sitting at my desk and I'm kind of Googling things and I find this Staten Island pug meetup. And there, it just so happens by, you know, the stars are aligning for me that this very weekend they were having their annual pool party. They've apparently been doing it for years. And despite the fact that I didn't have a pug, I wasn't going with my dog, they allowed me to come and photograph. And while I originally went there being interested in our relationship with animals in a kind of a cultural context, I left there being more interested in how the internet was facilitating these relationships. Like someone had gotten married through this meetup and all of these people, probably 30 some odd strangers and 30 pugs in someone's, in a stranger's backyard, because of the internet was something that was pretty extraordinary to me. It just as also as someone whose job it was to monitor internet trends and understand how we are connected by it. And it was also just like visually pretty amazing. And so from there, I just found myself going to more and more meetups. You know, I went to a few seances with a Wicca meetup. I went dumpster diving with a Freegan meetup, and I felt like I had something special there. And I wanted it to be separate from sort of like I do a lot of more journalism and editorial related work. So I wanted something separate from that. And that's where VSCO came in. And they had this really special grant. These kind of opportunities don't exist for artists very much anymore. And they kind of took this idea and helped me bring it to life and gave me the resources to travel and be able to kind of extend the vision in ways that I never thought possible.
That's really cool. I've used VSCOcam for years. I really love it on iOS. And I think they have Android now as well.
Yeah.
And I think it's great that they're giving back a little bit and funding artists.
Totally.
Yeah, we need that. We need more funding for the arts, I think.
Yes, we do.
How do you, it must be very tempting, and there's a very fine line when you go to these events, and some of them like the Oakland Lesbian Cougars and Cubs meetup, or you know, or the Pokemon Go Weekly Adventure, or the Asian Men and Black Women Connections. How do you avoid being judgmental? Or do you? I mean, the pictures can sometimes feel like you're being arch about something. But I think about Dion Arbus, for instance, who did amazing pictures of very kind of odd people without judgment in some way. And that was what made her pictures so interesting.
Right. And I mean, that's exactly my intention. I think that going in there and going in with the approach of being like, this is weird, would be the easy way to go into doing something. But I think that we're so complex. And I mean, personally, my interest as a photographer, even outside this book, it's really examining why we do the things that we do. I'm interested in culture at large and the kind of like the personalities and the interests that are making up our culture and our relationship to it. So going into these experiences, it's not like, oh, I don't understand. Like, why are you doing a Scrabble meetup or why are you obsessed with your pug? In a kind of negative connotation, it's more trying to understand what's bringing someone to that particular place and how has that affected their life. So I think that we need less kind of acting like people are weird because yes. At this point, what is weird at this right. point? It's all relative.
Right.
And what is weird when you can connect with someone so easily? So I think that's also kind of a overarching theme of the book and you know, hoping that, and I really do hope that comes through when people look through the pages.
Let's not project our own issues and discomfort onto these people. When you
exactly.
When you go into these groups, you are an outsider.
Right.
Are they wary at first?
You know, it differs from group to group. Sometimes, especially when you get outside of places like New York and LA, where people are used to the media being in their face, and you know, it's just like a common thing.
just another photographer, big deal.
Right, right, exactly. People are just used to it. But when you get to places like Reno and Orlando, it's a little bit of a foreign concept, especially when it's like Reno women of a certain age. It's like, why are you interested in coming and documenting our group? So sometimes it just takes a little bit of making people feel comfortable because, I wouldn't want someone to feel uncomfortable with me being there. That's counterintuitive to the concept. And so, just being respectful of people's places.
Yeah. So do you have things that you do? You know, I, as a photographer, my chief interest is people. That's really all I want to take pictures of. But it's mm-hmm. very hard for me for a number of reasons. And I'm going to ask for your help. So I end up taking a lot of pictures of mountains and lakes because they don't pose. You don't have to ask permission.
Yeah, you don't have to talk to them. So that's good.
You don't have to talk to them. So the real trick for me is, of course, I want to ask permission. I don't just, you know, jump somebody. But at the same time, as soon as you do that, they pose for you. How do you get in there in a new situation, new group? People might be a little bit wary. And get to the point where you could take really beautiful, candid pictures of them. They know you're there.
Right. Well, if I find that they're kind of wary first and foremost, what I do is maybe the first half, I'm not taking pictures. I'm just talking to them and trying to relate to them and understand who they are and telling them, you know, the past work that I've done to try to make them feel comfortable about it. And then from there, especially, it's such a weird thing because especially with the way that I shoot, the flash, it's very in your face. There's nothing subtle about how I photograph. And you can see
is
that.
Is the speed light on the camera or are you setting up lights on the side? Or?
So what I do is I either use the wireless transmitter or I'll use a cord and I'm kind of like putting the flash all over the place.
Okay, yeah, because you don't want it right over the lens. So you'll hold the camera
exactly,
here and you'll hold the...
Exactly. And it creates a more dynamic light experience.
Yeah, I'm thinking about the Vaporoo in Tennessee, which is a really... Let me see if I can find that picture here because it's a very much in-your-face, brightly lit picture. But that's what makes it so interesting and so and something probably you couldn't do very well with a camera phone. And so now that I understand the technique, I can see that, this is, I don't know how we can get this picture, Carson. Do you have an over-the-shoulder shot? But you can see you're right in this guy's face as he's vaping. It's very, the lighting's almost harsh, but that's your intent.
Yeah, right. That's my intent. But it's a strange thing because while I do have this kind of harsh approach, not harsh in, lighting terms.
Intrusive. You're right there. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's very intrusive. But people, especially in a group setting, there's something happens where it's like people forget that I'm there. I don't know if it's just like a personality thing or what it is, but I'm able to capture these moments, fortunately, and people don't notice that I'm there, despite how intrusive it is.
I have noticed that there are some photographers very skilled at this, and then there are people like me. But I really envy you. I think it's actually smart to go to a group because people are then in a group with their like-minded people. So they're kind of armored and you're by yourself. They're safe.
Right. They're in their safe space.
Right.
I'm the one that's not.
So. And you're not really an intruder.
Yeah.
You're there to document them and you respect them. And as soon as they realize that, I'm sure that they open up for you. And you could tell that in the pictures, these people are very, open and relaxed, and you get these great candid shots, and I'm so darn jealous. I love them.
And I mean, for some of them, it's like especially with the ones that are either in the Northeast region, a lot of them I've gone back to several times.
Peru, yeah.
Like there's a Harry Potter meetup in the book,
The group that shall not be named is so funny.
Yeah, they're the largest Harry Potter meetup, I think, in the world. And I've gone to that one multiple times. And when we had the release party for the book back in November, they actually, it was kind of like a joint, it was part book party, part Harry Potter meetup. So it was all Harry Potter themed.
Oh,
and so we had all of the group there in their cosplay. And, you know, it's like just kind of like becoming one of the gang, really.
So, yeah, that's it. You're an honorary member, aren't you?
Exactly. Exactly. I'm an honorary member.
But you're a photo. Ultimately, you are a photojournalist. This is your background. In fact, yeah. I want in a little bit. We'll talk about CES because you were there covering it for Wired, which is inspired.
I was
inspired.
And I actually saw the robot that you
the
were
Curry.
Talking about. Yes.
Is he cute? Is he?
Oh my god! I kind of got the notion that it was a he. So yeah. I agree with you on that. But it's so cute in real life. We were all just like, oh my god, how are you real?
Isn't that funny? It's hard to describe. We got to get one here. They only have a few prototypes. They were all at CES, but we got to get one here so people can see it. Because I think you have to see him and interact with him to really understand this. How cute this robot is.
I know. I want one. It had me thinking about like back in the late 90s, early 2000s, robotic animals.
Yes.
And I was like, how are they not making a comeback?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
You say that in your Instagram feed. You're looking at a very kind of non-human LG robot, and you say in your caption. By the way, your captions in your Instagram feed are great. You're saying, "Bring back robotic animals, please."
I do want them.
I know this is so inhuman. I'm actually waiting for a robot that I ordered 2 or 3 years ago that looks like this called Aibo. Yeah, it's from a woman. Cynthia Brashiel, who is a really good robotics person, who has done a number of humanoid robots, some really amazing humanoid robots. And I thought, well, this one will have character. And I think she does put a face on it, and it winks and stuff. And I think that's kind of the key to Curry. Yeah, there's a Jibo. I think that's the key to Curry also, is we are so tuned to look at people's eyes. That when a robot...
It has to have somewhat of a human element to it, I think.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be humanoid. But a face, something, and that's why I want to. That's why I think the best kind of photography is of people, because we're so tuned to look at faces and study them, and we get so much from, you know, a quick glance, and then we can go deeper.
I also think it's just like people are so interesting.
Exactly.
Just all of our different backgrounds, but I think portraiture and that kind of element of photography is just fascinating to see all different walks of life.
Yeah. We're talking to Amy Lombard. I really encourage you to go to her website, amylombard.com. You can see images from her book. Just came out as part of the VSCO Artist Initiative. She created this book over the last 3 years. Lovely pictures of groups of people, affinity groups of all kinds. And they're all connected. That's the name of the book. We'll have more with Amy in just a second. Our show today brought to you by ZipRecruiter. People are part of your company, too, right? In fact, companies are made of people. Well, not Soylent, but Soylent Green, but it's made of people. I always quote Steve Jobs, who had this great insight. He said, the corporation is one of the greatest inventions of the last few centuries, because it takes a group of people, brings them together, aligned on a purpose, and that group of people can do so much compared to a single individual. That's the incredible inspiration of it. And if you're in charge of hiring, here's where I'm going with this. If you're in charge of hiring for your company, you're in charge really of assembling that group. The right person can make that group sing. The wrong person can bring it down. You know that. We've all experienced it. That's why it's so important when you've got an opening at your company. And by the way, the hardest time, because you're shorthanded, especially if you're a small company or a sole proprietor here at Twit, you know, just a few of us, when we're shorthanded, the last thing you want to do is go on this big job hunt, but you need to find the right person. So let's say the right person's there, they're there, but how do you reach them? Which job boards are they on? What part of the country are they in? That's why ZipRecruiter is so great. You go one place, ZipRecruiter.com. Actually, go to ZipRecruiter.com/Twit. That way they'll know you saw it here. And post once. And that post will go to 200 plus job boards and Twitter and Facebook and everywhere. That means you're going to hit the largest possible population. You're much more likely to hit the person, that one person who's perfect for your job. Now, you might say, well, I don't know, Leo, because then I'm going to get a million resumes in my inbox and people are going to be calling me at work. No. All of the candidates go right into the ZipRecruiter interface. And you can design this interface. You can actually have it even be on your website. You can have a job page on your website. ZipRecruiter does all this for you. But you can put in questions, free form or multiple choice or yes, no questions. You can help that automatedly narrow it down so you can screen out people who just aren't right for the job and then hone in on the right person fast. I mean, literally within 24 hours, applications will start rolling into your ZipRecruiter interface and you will get that right person fast. And with the confidence that you're hiring the right person, it really works. That's why we've used it, and that's why more than a million businesses have used it or are currently using it. The best place to hire for any city, any industry, nationwide. You post once and watch those candidates roll in. Please give it a try. We've got a free trial for you at ZipRecruiter.com/twit. ZipRecruiter.com/twit. Don't suffer through the hiring process. Make the hiring process work for you. ZipRecruiter.com/twit. We thank them for supporting our show Triangulation. Amy Lombard is my guest. She has the best job in the world. She's a photojournalist. I mean, seriously. You must feel that way.
Sometimes it's like surreal. I'm like, I can't believe I get paid to do this.
Did you dream of it as a kid?
I did. I have this like vivid memory and it's so funny because it's so telling. Like the things that I photograph. I remember my aunt was like, what do you want to do when you grow up? And we were driving to the mall. And I was like, I want to be a photojournalist.
Wow.
And I'm just like, that just like sums up me going to the mall. I'm like the most American person claiming to be wanted to be a photojournalist. But yeah, and it's something I never thought that people would actually pay me to do. And fortunately it's worked and it's been an amazing ride.
That's really great. You in the foreword to your book Connected, you talk about your mother in the 90s. Even then, you had this desire to check out internet groups saying, Amy, don't put your real name on the internet.
Right. Like, God forbid you put your last name. It's like somebody was going to steal your soul.
Yeah.
Whereas now you click on something on Facebook and your identity gets stolen. So it's fine.
Mom was kind of right. But at the same time, this is the world we live in, right?
Right. And, you know, I grew up in a time where I still remember life without the internet. So I remember getting my first screen name, the different kind of platforms that I connected to over the years, and just seeing how that shaped me as a person and shaped my interests. And it's kind of interesting to see it all come full circle, especially in regards to this book.
My kids are probably, my daughter's probably about your age, and I had that same, I shouted at her, Abby, don't use your real name on the internet. But the funniest thing, and she was probably 11, she said, oh no, Dad, don't worry. I'm a 30-year-old guy from Philadelphia. I'm into cars. What? She was smart enough even then to create a persona. I think she was playing Neopets. Do you remember that?
Oh, I love Neopets. Yeah. Oh my God.
Yep. You are her age.
Oh my God.
We will in the future, and maybe not even in the future, in the present, we will be able to identify people by which internet meme they resonates with them, right? Oh, Neopets. Oh, I know how old you are. Yeah. Well, of course you like Neopets. You like pets. You like dogs. You like chihuahuas. You've got Sasha there.
Right. It
all's coming together, Amy.
Exactly.
Your internet dossier is being created. So tell me about CES. Wired Magazine hired you to go down there just to shoot, right?
Yeah, just to shoot. It was a mix of photographing gadgets that the editors were interested in and then, of course, just documenting the general scene. It's so interesting just to see all, like, I feel like at this point I've seen enough drones and enough virtual reality things to kind of last me a lifetime. But it was really amazing and I've always wanted to go.
This is your first time.
First time at CES.
Oh.
Which, you know, I saw, you know, I don't know if you were there, but some of the people who go, they get the, like, I've been here 10 years. I've been here so and so years.
I'm that guy.
One guy I saw who had the 40-year sticker.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, that must have been cool to go to CES 40 years ago.
No, it wasn't.
Okay, just kidding.
It was not nearly, it was, you know, cassettes. It wasn't that interesting. well, the new thing is the cassette. You're going to love this.
But there were cassettes at CES, there were a bunch of different like boombox speakers with cassette insert. So I guess that's like the cool thing now. I don't know.
Hipsters. I'm telling you.
Yeah, the hipsters, man.
I'm telling you.
Coming back.
So you didn't drop acid though. Somebody, who was it? Somebody for was it BuzzFeed dropped acid at the and went down there for her
that
first time.
That sounds like absolutely terrible. Oh my God.
Terrible idea. You're practically on acid anyway, right? Because there's all this.
Right. Jingling. And then just seeing all the robots while you're on an acid trip, that just sounds like the worst thing ever.
How do you balance? I mean, you're sent down there really to take pictures of things. There it is. What was her name? Because I want to give her credit for being the bravest. Erin Gloria Ryan. I want to give her credit for being the bravest, craziest person for the Daily Beast. Dropped acid and saw my first CES. And by the way, she just took regular pictures and they looked like they were just, you know, acid trip pictures.
Oh, my God.
I mean, it is. Look at that. Imagine seeing that.
I saw that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Especially the polar. I did not understand that at all. Seeing that while on acid just sounds like a nightmare.
So the camera companies do that. For some reason, they all do that. They'll set up kind of scenes that are insanely colorful for you to test the cameras on, especially the video cameras. And there's always very surreal and weird. And sometimes there's people sitting there. There's Amy.
There was one guy at the Polaroid tent who was just like, I don't know if he was a clown, but just totally dressed in white with like weird paint marks all over him.
Oh, you took a great picture of him.
Yeah, I took a photo of him. It's on my Instagram. But I was like, I don't know who came up with this. But
yeah, and why? Why are we doing this?
Sure.
What's the idea? Let me see if I can. There it is. But again, I love your caption, sexy CES. A little
I'm
bit.
Glad you appreciate it.
Yeah, a little sarcastic there. What's in Connected? What was your favorite group? What was the? Where did you have the most fun? What group would you join now?
Let's see. Well, one that I did that I wasn't expecting to like as much as I did was this barefoot meetup in Eastern Massachusetts. And not that I went into it with like any sort of thoughts, but it's like I live in New York City for a reason. I don't really like nature that much. The idea of walking through the mud without shoes on after a rainstorm in the summer is not something I would normally consider fun. But I went to this meetup and just going on this hike with these people, it was like a 3 or 4 mile hike up this trail in Upton, Massachusetts. And it was so cool. I don't know. I can't even explain the feeling. It's like, I would totally do that again. And I would certainly go on another barefoot hike. But experiences like that and understanding like the guy who started the group, he was almost disabled before he started living a barefoot lifestyle. And then by giving up shoes cold turkey, it completely changed his life. And that's why he started this group, is to kind of like preach the message of the barefoot lifestyle to other people and to connect with other like-minded people. So just getting to meet people like that and do things that I maybe wouldn't normally do was a really fun aspect of making the book.
Yeah, no kidding. Although my feet hurt just thinking about it.
Yeah, but I guess these shoes really kind of like mess up your whole alignment of your body.
Of course they do. And, yeah.
Yeah.
You're not made to wear shoes, clearly.
Right. Right. But he lives in Boston and he doesn't wear them. And I asked him, I was like, what do you do during the winter? And he's like, winters are not very fun for me. I can imagine.
Wow. You also do, you work for a lot of great publications. You mentioned Time Magazine. That's kind of fun. So what were you doing at Time?
So I was a social media editor. I had started over at Life.com doing social media for them. And when
Life as in Life Magazine?
Yes, yes.
God, that's like the photographer's dream.
It's like the photo mecca. I had started off there as a photo intern. And the amazing thing about Life is that they own all of these images. So it's like being able to hold the Country Doctor photo essay in your hand and you can still smell the chemicals. Like really extraordinary experiences that I'll never forget. But so when Life.com folded and became a vertical on Time, I was then hired to do social media at Time, which became a bigger role in just kind of monitoring news and tech trends and things like that. And then they let me do a few photo essays, kind of like sort of towards the end, as you can see there.
Yeah, great stuff.
But, you know, around the time when I was there is when the book started. So certainly you can see the
Reptile Expo, the Puppy Prom.
Right. Valentine's Day at White Castle. Oh, another.
That's a dream come
favorite.
True.
Yeah, exactly. Very romantic.
Nothing like a slider for romance. Hide that engagement ring in the slider.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. That, she'll say yes for sure.
What could possibly go wrong?
Oh, my God.
I grew up reading Life magazine. I think my love for photography started with Life magazine. Every week it would come, and it was large format. Nobody remembers this. I'm old. But it was a large format magazine. It would come weekly, and I was a kid. I would just stare at every image. And the iconic images of the 60s are almost all from Life magazine.
Right. And what I loved about Life, especially working there, was that you had this certain idea of what Life magazine was, that it was really just war photography and photographs that really defined the times in a political way. But Life also covered a lot of really interesting aspects of our culture. Like one of my favorite photo essays was of a seeing eye cat that never ran that we found in the archives.
Oh, man.
And these kind of stories, and like there's another one that I love. It was like a women's Republican smoker. So these type of things, it's like, these are things that I want to photograph. So it certainly kind of shaped my vision and the things that I want to document as a photographer.
Yeah. We're talking to Amy Lombard. You've got to check her website out, amylombard.com. And there you can buy the book Connected, which is a little beautiful little book. It looks kind of like one of those Instagram books, you know, the instant books you can get published from Instagram. If you were really like the best photographer in the world and went to all these interesting internet groups and took pictures of them. So it's nothing like my Instagram books, in other words. It's really wonderful. We'll have a little more with Amy. I want to talk about photography in the age of the internet when we come back. Our show today brought to you by Audible.com. You know, this is one of the few books we've talked about you can't get on Audible.com. No audiobooks for photography books. I don't know why. You could have a reader going, and then in page 12, there's a picture. Let me describe it for you. Actually, there probably would be a market for that among blind people, right? Because that would be a huge loss for me. On the other hand, those of us who live by our ears, blind or not, love Audible. Listening to books brings them to life in your head. Couldn't sleep last night. So I put in I got the new Apple AirPods. I thought, I bet you these are just the right size for lying in bed and, you know, kind of listening to a book. And I listened to my book and I loved it. You just transported anywhere in the world. There's a great variety of fiction. Of course, all the Harry Potter books. And Audible's reader, Jim Dale, who does the Harry Potter books, there is nobody better in the world to bring alive the voices of Hagrid and the house elves. They come to life in your head. Jim Dale does every single voice. And I know the movies were great, et cetera, but if you haven't listened to Harry Potter, and what I did is I did it with my kids, and man, that was so much fun. Of course, they have nonfiction too. It's a great way to keep up on the world. The book I'm listening to, there's Trevor Noah's book. By the way, this is a great book, Born a Crime. It's the story of his childhood in South Africa, where he actually was a crime because he had a white father and a black mother, and that was a crime at the time in apartheid South Africa. And he talks about it. It's incredible. Of course, he's now host of The Daily Show and one of the funniest guys out there. It's a very well-done book, and he reads it. That's another thing. When you hear a book read by its author, some authors should not read their books, I'll admit it, but these performers, man, I listen to all the books. I've got Bruce Springsteen's book. He narrates it. Bruce Springsteen narrates his own memoirs. It is the best way to listen to that book. Look, I've got a book free for you if you go to audible.com/triangulation. I know sometimes people say, I don't know, could I listen to a book in the car? How much of it would I get? Would I miss it? Would I have to be rewinding all the time? Just try it and you'll see. Maybe it's not for everybody. Sure was for me. Saved my life when I had a commute from hell for 13 years from here to San Francisco. That's when I first discovered Audible back 16 years ago. And now I've got every Audible book. That's the other thing I love about Audible. Once you buy a book on Audible, it's yours to keep forever. So here's a way to get a book forever. Go to audible.com/triangulation. You'll be signing up for the Gold account. That's a book a month, plus the Daily Digest of the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal. So you can get keep up on current affairs. Two, you pick a book. That's the hardest thing to do because there's so many great books. Science fiction. You like science fiction? Get Peter F. Hamilton's Fallen Dragon. Oh, man. Unbelievable. So many good books out there. Audible.com/triangulation. If you decide it's not for you, you can cancel anytime in the first 30 days, but the book is yours to keep forever. I don't think you'll cancel. I think what you'll find is it is the best way to listen. In the car, walking the dog, washing the dishes, in the gym. There's nothing more boring than the gym, than treadmill. Ugh, so boring. Unless you've got a book. A great book will keep you activated and invigorated. Audible.com/triangulation. We love it. Try it today. Maybe we'll get them to, maybe this will be their first photo book. I will volunteer to narrate Connected for Audible.com. Amy Lombard is our guest. You said an interesting thing early on. You said you weren't sure how you would make a living as a photographer. I think every photographer today wonders that. Because everybody is suddenly, every amateur is a photographer too, right?
Right. And I think that's part of it. But for me, when I said that, it's like when I was in school, it didn't seem like there was either editorially or commercially a space for me to exist within that ecosystem. And a lot of the times when I was trying to pitch media outlets to actually hire me, they would either think I was too weird or the style was too much. So it wasn't until, you know, a little after I quit my job that people kind of start to take notice, because of a few stories that I did that kind of exploded on the internet.
That's what I want to know. How did you break in? I love this Kim Kardashian picture.
Yeah, that was a great life experience. I think partially, so one editor at New York Magazine had hired me randomly for a story on female football fans. And she had seen my work on a photo blog, which photo blogs were huge back in 2008, yeah. 2009.
I remember that.
It was way more of a thing than it is now. Now we just look at Twitter and Instagram and things
Instagram
like that.
Instagram killed everything. And Twitter.
Yeah, Instagram. It changed the game for sure.
Yeah.
So she had just seen my work on a photo blog back then. And after that, I just kind of developed a really nice relationship with New York Magazine. And they let me do whatever I really wanted to do. And they hired me for this story on a fashion trend called Normcore. That happened maybe a few months after I had quit my job at Time. And it was so bizarre because it was a fashion trend that hadn't really been visualized yet. It was basically normal clothing becoming the mainstream. But it was something that went totally viral and then became a thing. And suddenly my name was associated in this like fashion context. And it just, after then, people started answering my emails for, it was just the strangest thing, but I'm indebted to Normcore.
Well, but also if there's, clearly you have a distinctive voice, and I think that's...
Right, and I have a very specific point of view, and right. Fortunately people just like realize that, okay, she can do this, and it just all worked out.
It's a timely point of view. Because you're an internet native, and you kind of I hear the voice of the Twitter generation and the Instagram generation in your work, and that obviously, if you're a state old publication like New York Magazine and the New York Times, you crave that, you're desperate for that, and so your timing is obviously good.
I'm glad.
Lucky me, she says. how do you keep interested? How do you keep from getting bored with what you're doing?
You know, for me, it's hard to get bored when you're with so many interesting people all the time.
Yeah.
It's like on any given day, I could be with, I don't know, a politician or a Real Housewife. It really spans. No day is the same. So being bored is never in the itinerary. And then beyond that, in personal projects, I get really obsessed with things that I'm doing. Like right now I'm working on a project on square dancing that actually came out of this book.
How fun.
And so,
do you square dance?
Not very well.
It's fun.
Not very
well. You just follow the instructions.
Right. You're told what to do. But man, there are some people are very good, so hopefully I'll get up to their level. But But yeah, I think because I'm constantly documenting so many different things and going into other people's worlds, that boredom is never really an option.
Isn't that great to find something that you really love to do and to be able to do it? Now tell me a little bit about your technique, because you know, like that square dancing picture is a good example. Very brightly lit flash, clearly, right? And I'm looking at Sasha in his Ewok outfit. Same thing, in fact, to the point where his eyes are reflecting the flash. You're kind of celebrating that look.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for me, flash, when I first started photographing, I never expected that I would use any kind of artificial light source whatsoever. I was a purist in every sense of the word, very sensitive to natural light. But a friend of mine had gotten this Sunpak 622 Super, which is this flash that's probably about this big. if you can get any sense of it, it's like a foot big.
Yeah.
And I just remember thinking like, oh, I want to use that. That's really cool. And the first time that I used it, was a photograph of my friend Josh in his studio apartment. And I just remember looking at it and it was like hearing music for the first time. It's like everything just made sense. So from there on out, I just exclusively shot with flash, and it's something that I always use for no matter what the subject matter is.
That's another, when I talk about voice, that's another thing that's really important in a world where everybody's taking pictures, to have a unique voice and style. Here's a picture of some flowers that probably, everybody else would say, wow, but it's a unique style, and the colors pop and the contrast is great and it brings it out. And do you find that Instagram is a great place for you to kind of play with stuff and practice and try things?
You know, I don't think for me, Instagram serves as an outlet to share my images. I don't think it's necessarily
a portfolio.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Because a lot of the times what I post, it's not photographs that are coming directly off my phone, but sometimes it is. But for me, it's just an opportunity to share the work that I'm making with people. It really does serve as a mini portfolio and like mini promos that go out that show you what I'm working on and different stories that have come out. So in terms of keeping people aware of what you're doing, I think it's been incredibly beneficial, probably more than any other social media outlet.
It's funny. I, like you, I thought, oh, I'm never going to use flash. I want natural light. And now I'm looking at this and the really interesting things that happen because of the light that make it very intriguing to me. I think I'm going to have to break out my speed light.
Yeah, I think it really, what I love about flash, it has this way of elevating the everyday.
Yeah.
Of making little moments that might seem trivial important. And so it shines a spotlight on the everyday, which I really do like and I think works well with my work.
I think that's exactly, well, you nailed it. It's exactly it. It's not commonplace anymore. You're saying, exactly. Look at this. I love that. I love that. What an artist. And I'm so thrilled I could talk to you. And thank you for the book. I will, this is going to have a cherished place in my bookshelf. I have many friends who are professional photographers, and I just love your work. You're very inspiring. The book is Connected. You can find out more at Amy's website, Amy Lombard, AmyLombard.com. She sells the book there. Right now, limited edition signed, so get it quick before the mass market version comes out. I celebrate the mass market version. Get it out there. And there are lots of images there. And by the way, if you don't follow Amy Lombard on Instagram, you're missing out. Thank you, Amy, for joining us today on Triangulation.
Thank you for having me.
Really great to talk to you. All the best to Sasha. She's adorable. And she wants you to play with her right now.
I know. Can you hear her barking?
She says, come on, mommy, I want to play. Incidentally, love the shirt. It's a horse race shirt.
It is a horse race shirt. Thank you.
I love that. And tell me about the picture behind you.
Oh, so this is my mom. Can you see it?
Yeah.
So it's one of the first kind of like visual things that I was like, this is amazing. It was a painting that my grandmother commissioned of my mom when she was in high school.
Holding a cat.
Yeah.
And very ornate frame, almost a Louis Quatorze frame.
It's like so gaudy. I love it. And it was always in my grandparents' house. And when they passed, I was like, I need that painting.
Isn't that great to get those iconic things from your childhood that resonate with you and you alone, but that you grew up with and caught your eye. It's so right. nice to have those.
I love it.
You're
I
very lucky
it.
You got them. Thank you, Amy.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us.
It was great chatting with you.
Yeah, Amy Lombard, connected. Go to amylombard.com. We do triangulation every Monday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time, 1900 UTC. If you want to stop by, you could be here live. We stream it live, of course, as we do with all of our shows. You can watch on youtube.com/twit or on our own website. There are lots of ways to watch live on a Roku or an Apple TV. We also have live streams there, apps everywhere. And if you do watch live, please join us in the chat room, irc.twit.tv, because your feedback, your questions, you're the third leg on the stool, the third side of the triangle in triangulation, and your questions help me a lot. So please get on in there. But don't worry, if you can't, we make on-demand audio and video available on the website. You can download it. You can subscribe in your favorite podcatcher. I know many of you are listening on an airplane right now. We welcome you and thank you and hope you will when you land. Head over to twit.tv and see what else we have to offer. Thanks for joining us, and I will see you next time on Triangulation. Bye-bye.